Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And the thing that I'm going to talk about today is the plethora of writers and correspondents who find themselves in the Soviet Union. These are writers and correspondents from Britain and America who find themselves in the Soviet Union at the time of the February and the October revolutions and later the Russian Civil War. Now, the reason why I think it's important to talk about these writers is that much of what is written on the Russian Revolution in the English language is obviously written from an external perspective. It is written by English and British and American scholars who look at the Soviet Union from the outside. And the first chroniclers of the development of, firstly, Bolshevik and then later Soviet Russia were Western audiences were able to interact with were writers very often quite adventurous, risk-taking individuals who saw the revolution close up. Many of them, such as Arthur Ransome and John Reed, who I'm going to talk about particularly in this account, really embraced what the Bolsheviks stood for. And others had a perhaps more sceptical view. But certainly what they had to relay back to Western audiences shaped a generation in the 20s and 30s who became part of the fellow traveller movement. Now, I've done a podcast a while back on the fellow travellers, and they can be explained really as non-Communist Party members, but members of the of intellectual circles which were sympathetic to the Communist cause in Russia, who travelled to Russia and made a good account of Stalinism. And they were, their predecessors really are this generation of journalistic writers. So the first person we're going to look at today is Arthur Ransome, who's more famously known as the writer of the 1930s children's stories Swallows and Amazons. But in 1913, he left to go to Russia to ply his trade as a correspondent, and he later becomes the Manchester Guardian's man in Russia during the First World War, a stringer correspondent. And he had given little indication that he had any particularly radical political views. He was the son of a history professor who'd been educated well at Rugby Public School, something he apparently didn't enjoy very much, and became a writer in London, getting into all sorts of trouble when he published a biography of Oscar Wilde and was sued for libel by one of Wilde's aristocratic lovers. It was while he was in Russia that he became more and more interested in British Labour politics and revolutionary politics And it must be, I mean, this is before 1917, so this is before, really, the Bolsheviks have any kind of hold on the public consciousness. Throughout the First World War, there are very few Bolsheviks actually in Russia. Most of them are in exile, and there are a handful, such as Stalin and Kamenev, in Siberia. So the idea that Ransom has some kind of moment of conversion because red flags start to appear on the streets of Petrograd during 1917, that's not credible. It must be that there were overt currents of radical politics running through Russian society throughout the First World War, so overt that a moderately skilled Russian speaker, which Ransom was, he was learning all the time, was able to access them. And that kind of, I guess, gives us a bit of a clue as well about the process of politicalization and radicalization in Russia during the First World War. You know, if Ransom could engage with it, then how were Russians of an educated standing engaging with it? Most of the press back home in Britain were sympathetic towards the anti-communist and the anti-Bolshevik forces that eventually, after 1919, develop into the White Armies. And there is a widespread horror after October 1917 at the emergence of the Bolsheviks. There were a number of journalists in Russia, Ransom included, that had a slightly different take. They looked at the hardships inflicted on the Russian soldiers, and they could see this up close and see, you know, battered and exhausted soldiers getting off long trains to and from the front. And they thought it was simply unrealistic that these men should be forced to fight the Germans. They thought that it would be better for Russia to sign a peace and get herself out of the war, purely from the point of view of the men who are impacted hardest, the common foot soldiers of the Tsar's armies and then later the Provisional Government's armies, having to take the impact of this. So it was from a kind of a very compassionate standpoint that people like Ransom formed their views of the Bolsheviks. They knew that the Provisional Government had no chance of winning the war, and they knew that also the Provisional Government had no chance of extricating Russia from the war. So Ransom really asked, well, what is the point of the Provisional Government? You need a government to do one of two things. Ransom himself had lost a brother on the Western Front, and he was no fan of the Germans, and quite a loyal British patriot. It's not a valid critique of Ransom to suggest that because eventually he becomes a supporter of the Bolsheviks, that he was in some way anti-Britain. Far from it. I mean, he believed that his kind of affiliations could exist in both camps. But it was the plight of the war against Germany that really makes him believe that the Bolsheviks are the only option. He was one of those journalists, and speaking as one who has been in that trade previously, that is occasionally in the wrong place at the right time. And certainly he decides to take a sojourn back to England on the 17th of October 1917. And so within a matter of days, the Provisional Government has fallen and he misses the whole thing, the greatest news story potentially of his career, one that is covered by John Reed, whom we'll talk about in a moment. And however, when he's back in England, he tells people with great candour that there is no chance that Kerensky, Alexander Kerensky, can hold the Provisional Government together and it is going to collapse, and is shown to be correct. I think it's important to realise that for a journalist in Russia at the time, a country facing starvation and in a condition of heading towards civil war, that it took the job took a heck of a toll on the nerves, and Ransom was physically and mentally exhausted by 1917. However, when Ransom returned to Russia, he became very sympathetic towards the Bolsheviks. He had close contact with both Lenin and Trotsky, both of whom were happy to talk to him, happy to espouse the Bolshevik views on war and revolution and the counter-revolution that they expected. And the relationship grew strong enough for Ransom to actually marry one of Trotsky's secretaries. He covered the Russian civil war for the Manchester Guardian, but at the same time, he had been recruited by MI5 as well. So Ransom is an interesting and hard to kind of nail down character, or conflicted loyalties and a sense of perhaps a greater, in an inflated sense of his own importance. In his early reporting on the October Revolution, which he reported from afar, he has some surprisingly kind of prescient things to say. He pointed out that it was a fairly bloodless affair, and he wrote, "The lack of bloodshed during the Bolshevik coup d'etat is due to two causes. Firstly, the comparative unanimity of the classes represented in the Soviet." I'm not sure I agree with that one personally. "And secondly, to the fact that large masses of the population increasingly despair of politics and, though possibly disapproving, are willing to stand aside." Really, as we've discussed before in this podcast, the point about the October Revolution was that there was no one left to defend the provisional government. It had not been able to answer any of the needs of the Russian people. In another report on the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk, he manages, I think, to hit the nail dead on the head. And he articulates some of the things that Adam Tooze has recently said in The Deluge on this very topic, where he wrote in January 1918, "I wonder whether the English people realise how great is the matter now at stake and how near we are to witnessing a separate peace between Russia and Germany, which would be a defeat for German democracy in its own country, besides ensuring the practical enslavement of all Russia. A separate peace will be a victory, not for Germany, but for the military caste in Germany. It may mean much more than the neutrality of Russia. If we make no move, it seems possible that the Germans will ask the Russians to help them in enforcing the Russian peace terms on the Allies." So Ransom is there, moving towards, whilst being a Bolshevik sympathiser, actually moving towards a position where he was advocating, really, some kind of intervention in Russia. He's saying, you know, if we make no moves. So again, he's a very ambiguous figure. The question as to whose side he was really on I suppose it's even the wrong question. Arthur Ransom was working from his own position of what he viewed as kind of correct and moral, and saw perhaps Bolshevism or even an Allied intervention as just tools to make this possible. So there are always actors during revolutions, be they bystanders or participants or observers, who are not working from any of the official scripts from those of the revolutionary parties or counter-revolutionary forces. And this is to be expected. Revolutions are chaos. Ideas rise and fall constantly throughout revolutionary periods, and people have new perspectives on what is possible, what is preferable. Part of Ransom's support for the Bolsheviks comes from his conviction that they would at the very least offer stability in Russia. And he's kind of surrounded by a host of Western, particularly American.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Businessmen and diplomatic figures who see the Bolsheviks as offering really the only opportunity of a united front against the Germans. During the commencement of the Civil War, a wave of xenophobia, an understandable xenophobia, emerges within Russia. The British, Americans, and French and Japanese are helping white armies in Russia, and the suspicion that British journalists and diplomats are indeed spies, which a great many of them were, is widespread. Ransom made his exit to Sweden, being reliably informed that he was in serious danger if he didn't do. And from there he was followed by MI6. And they had a key interest in him. They'd been opening his mail for some time. And there had been all sorts of speculation from other correspondents who knew him in Russia about his affiliations, and particularly his critical talk of the British government to the Bolshevik leadership. However, much of this was unfair. He was threatened with exposure by Horatio Bottomley of the patriotic magazine John Bull, who threatened to expose him as a Bolshevik spy. But really, throughout the war, he hadn't been a spy, he'd been a conduit, a means by which the British Foreign Office could speak with Bolshevik leaders and see if there were areas of dialogue, negotiations that could be entered into. And he had Robert Bruce Lockhart in Petrograd had been his wartime handler. So these figures often drift from one extreme to another, between the peripheries of revolutionary politics, and have loyalties back to the mother countries, and they can be very useful means of establishing dialogue. A much more established journalistic figure who featured in the drama of the October Revolution and who wrote one of the seminal works on it was the American journalist John Reed, who had been kind of an understudy of the radical American journalist Lincoln Steffens and had been on the periphery of progressive politics in America for a long time. And John Reed perhaps fits more neatly into the fellow traveller movement. He was a good friend of Frieda Kirchwey, the editor of The Nation magazine, and was part of a circle of overt sympathisers for the Bolshevik cause from 1917 onwards. John Reed based much of his belief in Bolshevism on radical labour politics in America that had developed throughout the 19th century, and he drew comparisons between the two. I'm not sure whether there are always valid comparisons to be made, but this is always the difficulty between hopping between different particular contexts. In 1914, he travelled to Europe to cover the First World War for The Masses magazine, a radical publication in New York City, and for the Metropolitan magazine. So he was already deeply inured within socialist writing and politics long before the advent of the Russian Revolution. And like Lenin, he made the direct link between capitalism and war in when he saw the fighting up close in places like Bulgaria. He became deeply opposed to the conflict and saw it as the means by which the capitalist classes fought one another using the working class. And he wrote in 1916, "I could fill pages of the horrors that civilized Europe is inflicting upon itself. I could describe to you the quiet, dark, saddened streets of Paris, where every 10 feet you are confronted with some miserable wreck of a human being, or a madman who's lost his reason in the trenches, being led around by his wife." The Masses was an anti-war publication, and whilst America wasn't in the war, they could get away with it. In 1917, when America joins the war, it becomes under immense pressure to change its editorial stance. The various laws that were introduced by Woodrow Wilson again on sedition make it a very difficult time for anti-war journalists. Reed decides to go to Russia. He believes that Russia, after February 1917, has been the crucible of world events, and he and his wife Louise Bryant make their way to Petrograd, and they arrive there in September 1917, and they are just at the right moment, just as ransom hadn't been, they are just at the right moment to witness the October Revolution, something that Reed instinctively embraced. He wrote admiringly in his book 10 Days That Shook the World of the brilliance of Lenin and Trotsky in managing to orchestrate the seizure of power. Reed found it all terrifically exciting. He managed to interview Kerensky, had the last interview with Kerensky before Kerensky disappeared into exile, and he forced his way into the Smolny Institute, where the Bolsheviks had their headquarters, managed to become acquainted with Lenin and Trotsky. And Lenin, he said, he was a short, stocky figure with a big head set down in his shoulders, bald and bulging, little eyes and a snubbish nose, wide, generous mouth and heavy chin, clean-shaven, but now beginning to bristle with the well-known beard of past and future. Dressed in shabby clothes, his trousers much too long for him, unimpressive to be the idol of a mob, loved and revered as perhaps few leaders in history have been. A strange popular leader, a leader purely by virtue of intellect, colourless, humourless, uncompromising and detached, without picturesque idiosyncrasies, but with the power of explaining profound ideas in simple terms, of analysing a concrete situation, and combined with shrewdness and the greatest intellectual audacity. Reed was in a lot of trouble under the Espionage Act when he got back to America. He formed with Earl Browder and others the American Socialist Party, and he went back and forth to Russia during the 1920s, where he met various radical figures and became pivotal in the establishment of the Communist Party of the United States. And he exists within a period in the early 1920s of crisis for communism. The revolution hasn't spread, it hasn't ignited, and the various revolutions in Bavaria, in Hungary, and other places across Europe have failed. The revolutionary moment of 1919 to 1920 doesn't really take off. So Lenin suggests that the thing to do at the Second Party Congress would be for communists from across Europe who have been to Russia to return home and infiltrate social democratic parties like the Labour Party in Britain and the trade union movement and steer them towards communism. So he argued really for entryism. Reed and other members of the Communist Party of the United States don't think this is a good idea, and that they were largely defeated. And Reed then suddenly begins to realise that Lenin has become a dictatorial figure within the Russian and the world communist movement, and became very disillusioned, and saw in 1920 the events that he had participated in taking a much darker turn. He was depressed and felt utterly betrayed, and that he had given his journalistic energies to something that had now backfired. And he suddenly realised that former comrades such as Zinoviev, and particularly Radek, who was a very good, Karl Radek, who was a very good friend of his, were now conspiring against him and using the Russian Soviet press and the left-wing press in Europe to attack him. His wife met him in Moscow in September 1920, but found that he was profoundly ill. And it was just 8 days later that he was diagnosed with typhus, and he died on the 19th of October 1920. There, even though he had begun to have suspicions about the communist movement, even though he had begun to see it for the dictatorship that eventually becomes under Lenin, he's given a state funeral, and he's one of the few non-Russian Soviets to be buried in the Kremlin Wall, along with all the other great Soviet luminaries. So you've got two very different characters, Arthur Ransome and John Reed, and they are just a couple of the many figures, many journalistic figures within the Western journalistic community in Russia during the First World War and during the Revolution, who are intellectually and politically changed by the Revolution and find themselves, if not taking sides, at least taking stances, influenced very often by their own previous experiences, but also by the extraordinary events that they are swept up in, that can't help but politicise and radicalise people's perspectives. There were journalists in Russia from Western newspapers who were, perhaps a majority even of them, were not sympathetic towards the Bolsheviks. A great many of them thought that the advent of Bolshevism was a great calamity. So we shouldn't draw from this that people like John Reed were in the majority. They certainly weren't. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this. We've got some great stuff coming to you soon. We've got a new ebook out, Victorian Politics, 1851 to 1914, Student's Guide. You can find that on Amazon. I'll be putting a link to it on the website. We've got International Relations, 1870 to 1914, another Student's Guide. And there should be, because I'm writing it, a new ebook, International Relations, 1918 to 1939, The Causes of the Second World War, Your Questions Answered. Tyrell Eskelson's brilliant draft of The American Century, a beginner's guide to everything you need to know about the USA in the 20th century, will be with us fairly shortly, ideally downloadable for Christmas, for that special Christmas gift for somebody. So there's a whole bunch going on at the moment, so check it out, you know. Anyway, thanks very much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.